1 Samuel chapter 4. Thus the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out to meet the Philistines in battle and camped beside Ebenezer, while the Philistines camped in Aphek. The Philistines drew up in battle array to meet Israel. When the battle spread, Israel was defeated before the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 men on the battlefield. When the people came into the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us take to ourselves from Shiloh the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, that it may come along with us and deliver us from the power of our enemies." So the people sent to Shiloh, and from there they carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts, who sits above the cherubim. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. As the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout, so that the earth resounded. When the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, "What does the noise of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews mean?" Then they understood that the Ark of the Lord had come into the camp. The Philistines were afraid, for they said, "God has come into the camp." And they said, "Woe to us, for nothing like this has happened before. Woe to us! Who shall deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods who smote the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. Take courage and be men, O Philistines, for you will become slaves to the Hebrews, as they have been slaves to you. Therefore, be men and fight." So the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated, and every man fled to his tent. And the slaughter was very great, for there fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers. And the Ark of the God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. Now a man of Benjamin ran from the battle line and came to Shiloh in the same day with his clothes torn and dust on his head. When he came, behold, Eli was sitting on his seat by the road, eagerly watching, because his heart was trembling for the Ark of God. So the men came to tell it in the city, and all the city cried out. When Eli heard the noise of the outcry, he said, "What does the noise of this commotion mean?" Then the man came hurriedly and told Eli. Now Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were set so he could not see. The man said to Eli, "I am the one who came from the battle line. Indeed, I escaped from the battle line today." And he said, "How did things go, my son?" Then the one who brought the news replied, "Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there has also been a great slaughter among the people. And your two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the Ark of God has been taken." When he mentioned the Ark of God, Eli fell off his seat backward beside the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died, for he was old and heavy. Thus he judged Israel 40 years. Now his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was pregnant and about to give birth. When she heard the news that the Ark of God was taken and that her father-in-law and her husband had died, she kneeled down and gave birth, for her pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the women who stood by her said to her, "Do not be afraid, for you have given birth to a son." But she did not answer or pay attention. And she called the boy Ichabod, saying, "The glory has departed from Israel, because the Ark of God was taken, and because of her father-in-law and her husband." She said, "The glory has departed from Israel, for the Ark of God was taken."
Thank you, Jeff. For appreciate it reading that. That was 1 Samuel chapter 4. Are there any questions or comments? I know this is not a very pleasant chapter to read, because you see a lot of people die in Samuel chapter 4. A lot of presumably good people die. Not just, you know, Eli and his two sons. You have hundreds and thousands of Israeli soldiers die as well. So any questions or comments? Things that caught your attention? Yes, Anne.
The idea that the Philistines knew better than the people themselves that God was not the Ark. of the covenant, but God was, his presence was symbolized by the ark or one more so, or something in the heart of the Philistines understood it better than the Israelites themselves.
I think in some ways you're right in that they point out that this is the gods plural, so they don't understand if it's a single god, the Philistines didn't understand if it's a single god or multiple. They did know, they knew what the ark was. They may not know exactly what it looked like, but they knew it didn't look like a person. Unlike all of the Philistine gods look like people. Well, this thing doesn't. So they recognize it wasn't the normal type of god that they're accustomed to seeing or knowing about. Yes, Jeff.
God, I guess it could be kind of similar to the saying, the ark of the Lord, the ark of the Lord, the ark of the Lord.
Yeah, as opposed to the Lord, it's a container of him rather than him. That would be a dead giveaway. Yeah. So they did have a good feeling, and note, they even point out, this has never happened before. I mean, actually, God coming into battle.
Right.
They haven't seen this. This is new. Because it wasn't really ever supposed to happen. We'll get to that. Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, what about?
I'm sorry.
What
be
about
careful.
With
Jericho? Jericho was the only exception that we know of, which is what I think the Israelites were attempting to do.
Duplicate.
It just didn't work.
Maybe with Jericho, didn't God tell them to bring it? The priest before.
Oh yeah. In Jericho, God had everything. Yeah, God had everything.
They didn't ask God.
Exactly.
What should we do?
Exactly. This is different. Jeff's right that they did. The ark was there in Jericho, but that was a quite separate scenario. It happened, of course, 400 years earlier, and God directed the whole thing. And no one alive then would have known about it. Well, maybe a few people. Jericho, everybody there died, so I don't know who would have known about it. Honestly, unless somehow word got out. Moses was around. Or no, Moses wasn't there either. So as far as in a normal battle, though, the Ark of the Covenant had never brought out to actually go to battle as far as like anything other than with the exception of Jericho. As far as, at least according to the Philistines, it hadn't happened before.
Yeah.
We'll learn a bit later, it really doesn't happen on a regular basis. So, any other questions or comments? There's a lot of stuff in this particular chapter, though it doesn't seem like it. We've heard and read this story before, and we will hear and read it again in a different format some other time in the future, which we'll get into, I hope. But let's start where we began, with Samuel chapter 4, verse 1. There's a statement there, just the very first line. The word of Samuel went out to all Israel, or befell all Israel, or came upon all of Israel. Depending on how you happen to word it, doesn't make a whole lot of difference. The point is, all of Israel found out about the prophecy regarding Eli and his family. So they all knew about it. That's what it's trying to say. The story, what Samuel had read, what Samuel relayed to Eli, his sons would have known about it. Samuel obviously told people, or at least somebody, for all of Israel to find out. Eli would have made it, not say well known, but somehow information got out. We'll discuss a little bit more as to the implication of that shortly. But right now, we know all of Israel found out about it. Israel goes out to war. Nothing really fancy here. It's normal stuff. They camp at Ben-Ezer while the Philistines camp at Aphek, which is here, my little map. Note, I have the little dotted line put along here is the Philistine territory. Aphek is actually outside of Philistine territory at this point in time.
Is it?
But Philistines own it. Yes.
Is it north of modern-day Ashkelon?
Yes.
Okay.
Ashkelon's down here where Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, Ekron, all these was a normal area.
Like almost up by modern Tel Aviv. Right?
Yes, very, very close to it. This was an Israelite city. But Philistines up to this point have been creeping out and building their border and taking more and more and more of Israel. Philistine territory is normally quite a few miles further down south. And a couple of small territories, which I didn't on the line exactly perfect to scale, but it's scattered in and around. There are some Israelite cities that are now under Philistine control, because they've been battling for years, and the Philistines are winning. They're not in the habit of losing battles. One of the things, the fact that along this borderline is mostly all mountainous and hill terrain, not heavily populated. it's pretty easy to take an area that's not heavily populated. So that's what they've been doing. They moved themselves out. They took Aphek, which, of course, is only about 15 miles or so from Shiloh. Not that far of a distance. You wouldn't necessarily see anything, but theoretically, you might see some smoke on the horizon, potentially, if there was a major battle, which didn't happen here. But in theory, they're within smoke distance eyeshot, if I can say. Because Shiloh is significantly higher in elevation than Aphek is. So it would have been looking somewhat downward toward it. Okay, so that's where the Philistines are at. The Ebenezer is what it's called. Yeah, Ebenezer. It's not even really a town. It's more like a place. It's just to the east of Aphek. It's really not a. It's not a city. There's no residents who live there. It's just like atop a hill. Same kind of thing. So there is no map that points out. It just says a couple miles. It's about a mile or so east of Aphek, and nothing really fancy about it. They go to battle. Israel loses first. What's the mistake we've heard Israel do a couple of times now, which they repeat here? Yes, David.
They presume to get the chariot for the Ark of God. They think that just because they have it, they're going to have his favor without really
talking to him
or even asking him.
Exactly.
And that's presumption, sin of presumption.
Exactly. They've done this before. They did this with the people of Benjamin when they had to fight with Gibeah in that whole big battle. Did they ask God? No. They just did it. You don't get to do that. You always have to ask him. Whether you think you're right or not, it doesn't make any difference. You still have to ask him. He doesn't change. We do. Unfortunately, they obviously didn't change. They should have. So they lose. They consult. Who do they consult? Elders of Israel in verse 3. Why did the Lord smite us today before the Philistines? Thus they concluded, let us go to Shiloh and take the ark. Note, who answered the question, why did the Lord smite us?
The elders.
Yeah, the elders answered it. How do the elders know? They don't. The only one person who could actually contact God and ask him, Eli.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, it's slowly moving over to Samuel. Eli has access to God directly. Now, granted, God stops, kind of is diminishing, or it ended talking to Eli. But he was still talking to Samuel. So they could have asked Samuel. He's a young man. He's still available. Could walk around. Call him.
Yeah, but you see that, like down in verse 18, it mentions that he had judged Israel. So he was, I guess,
he was the judge. He was a judge, and up until he died at 98, I think it was. Yes, I think it was 98.
One of the rare times a priest was a judge.
It was a rare times. It did happen, but it was a rare time. So Eli is the person they're supposed to consult, but did they? Sort of. You know, they went all the way to Shiloh, got both of his sons and the ark. How do you do that without the high priest's permission?
You don't.
So they kind of did, but they kind of didn't. You're right. They didn't ask anybody, at least not really it's recorded. They didn't say, okay, please go pray, consult God. Mm-hmm. They went to Shiloh and grabbed the ark and both of Eli's sons. So Eli would have had to give complicit permission. Yes, you may go into the Holy of Holies, access the ark, pull it out without consulting God. No, we have rules listed in Numbers and Deuteronomy regarding when God wants to move and when he doesn't. Recall any of those rules?
Yeah, it's pretty involved. I'm surprised they survived the process.
No kidding! Yes, Ellie.
Right. The sin of presumption
is pretty profound.
Over this. And we've seen that before and what happened.
We've seen it before. Now, they didn't learn from the before happening, but we've seen it happen. So they sort of consulted Eli in the manner of speaking, but didn't actually ask him to consult God. But there are normally rules. What are the rules? Do you remember any of them? Well, there's blasting of horns, there is the tearing down of the temple, there is smoke, there is incense, everything resolved in order for God to say, now I'm ready to move.
Yeah, because you'd have to take down the whole thing from the outside in.
Just to access it.
Yes.
Why would God do this? Why didn't just kill him? How dare you access my home without asking permission?
Teach him well.
How long had it been since... David wasn't there yet.
David's not around yet. He hasn't been around for about 15 years.
So it's been many, many moons since Aaron's son was... Since who was it that...
The last... Right. Eliezer.
Right.
Eliezer was that. That's what Eliezer was. He was
his son.
Phineas's son?
Phineas's son.
It could be Phineas. I don't remember. But yeah, the various priests last that did something they shouldn't have done.
Strange fire.
And they did something, yeah. Oh, that was Aaron's two sons, Nadab and Abihu, I think it was. Fire.
Eliezer
did something later, which I can't remember who it was.
His son was one that was, Phineas. I think it was son of Eliezer.
He could have. I don't remember. Anyway, so various priests did various things. But you don't access the Holy of Holies without God's permission. You just don't.
You get a death sentence.
It's a death sentence. No, Uzziah, I believe, tries to do that many, many years from now, or from this age. He entered in, and guess what happened?
He had leprosy.
Well, God struck him. He didn't die immediately. He dies later. God strikes him. You don't do it. But yet, we have something that seems out of character. Why did God not strike them? We're going to get into why in a minute. Oh, hold on. He had his hand up first. Yes, Jeff.
But, you know, their being able to do this would have led to their conclusion that God was with them.
That's true. It would. It would support that idea. And they partially are right. Yes,
Richard. I said, people don't get killed quickly in the ark.
Not usually.
That would take a while. Then they could die later. And that's what happened to
one guy died once he touched it.
That's what happened to his sons. I mean, Eliezer's sons.
Oh, Eliezer.
They died.
Yes, they did die. Shortly thereafter.
Thereafter.
It may have taken a full day from the travel to 15 miles, but yes, they died shortly thereafter. Yeah. Well, one person, I hear it was touched it and died. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. I forgot his name, but yeah. We'll get there.
When that time comes.
It's not there yet. We'll discuss why he did it and what happened. So it seems we have a partial implicit permission from God, and that the priests were allowed to do so without even asking or going through the whole process of moving the ark. But nobody actually, apparently according to the word, consulted and asked God.
Yeah, but these sons of
they're unique people.
Of Eli.
Yes.
They were so calloused anyway. I mean, they had been openly disregarding the Torah regarding how priests. They are calloused. It's almost like they have even lost their fear of God. So in a way, when we go away from God, He goes away from us. Which doesn't mean to say we don't eventually get judged. But there's such a hardness of heart here. It's almost like Yahweh's unnecessary.
These we have our good luck charm.
These are sort of like...
Yes.
Right?
You're getting to the core, I believe, as to why God allowed them to do it. Is that that's the core of it. Because...
It is.
But let's back up a little bit. The previous couple chapters, which we had learned about the Hophni and Phineas, new names. What they were doing, was God at all pleased?
No.
What was the curse, Eli? No matter what happens with you and your entire family line, no one will ever be able to erase this unforgivable sin. Ever.
I don't think Eli wanted them to consult God, or I'm
sure probably not.
The boys didn't, because otherwise it would have become even well known. How mad God was at them.
If
everybody had known how mad God was at those two men, would you have let those two men represent your people to carry the ark, or have anything to do with the ark, or have anything to do with you as an army?
Yes, Jeff.
It almost seems like this is a case where God had, for a point in time, given up the ark.
Sort of,
because this is almost like the temple and allowing a like Cyrus or whoever to actually take it without
being punished for it.
Nebuchadnezzar.
Yes, Ellie.
Well, two things. One thing, that God lets us play out a play if He thinks, hey, I got a good idea.
And He did have a good idea.
He had a good idea. But I think Ellie at this point, because when he said, how did it go? He knew.
He wasn't supposed to do it.
He knew calamity was going to come. He's just sitting there waiting until it happens. Because there's no way. God already said what's going to happen. And he couldn't, I don't think he had within him the heart to try to stop whatever was going to play out. Once
Once he knew the prophecy,
feels,
it was probably going to occur.
Just get out of the way because you know.
Well, he had given in, so he just opted out. These two boys have self-will run riot, and he had just opted out, become and just gone to eating and, you know, feeding his flesh as a means of just. I mean, he abdicated.
I think he was despairing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He just let go because these two were just taken over completely. Well, he hadn't done anything about it.
Something also, it seems like if he was to bring judgment upon the whole house of Eli, this is one way to do it.
It is.
He gets both of the sons out there.
Easily accessible,
and then, you know, you've got the devastation that losing both the ark and the two sons would do to Eli.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's true. It would do a lot of devastation.
I don't think Eli had any idea the ark would somehow be involved. I think he knew his sons were going to.
He knew something was going with his sons. Whether he knew his ark was going to be the cause, or somehow that this battle was going to be the cause of their death, that's debatable.
You know,
but
you get to a point, Daniel, with your kids. Sometimes you go, "All right,
do your own. Exactly. Just do it.
Do
what happens.
Do what you have to do because I've done a big mess of this and I give up.
I quit.
And here he comes.
Okay. Hold on. Stick with that for just a second. With that philosophy, if I'm God and I have my home, and the people serving it have defiled my home, do I wish to still live there?
No.
What was your question?
Do I wish to still live there?
Oh,
no.
In my home that is defiled.
I'll leave.
He'll leave.
Yeah, you take it.
You allow your home to be removed. You don't need it anymore. Which is exactly what he did. God never returns to Shiloh, does he?
No.
He got his way. You know what? You ruined my home. Go ahead. Take me, move me out, and level it.
I'm going to go.
Which is what happens.
Then he wore Jerusalem.
Shiloh gets destroyed. Not at this point in time, but it gets wiped out. There's nothing left of it. He's moving. It's moving day.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's moving day. So it was actually in God's interest to allow the sons to go in there, take his footstool, his seat, out, so he can wipe it, just completely cleanse it. There's nothing left.
And protect the
destroy
seat. Protect the seat.
Protect his little seat and move it somewhere else. And when David rebuilds, okay, now you can move my little seat right back where it belongs, the new place
where I want it to be.
In a new tribe.
So that was the last of Shiloh?
Yes, this is the last. Shiloh essentially dies here. Yes.
Well, you know, truly, the glory has departed.
It is. Precisely. The glory departed. Departed Shiloh, it departed Israel, departed everything. Yes, Ellie.
From Ephraim to Judah.
Yes, it did. Which we're going to get into in Psalms. Psalms discusses this.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's getting into the daughter.
Well, not yet. There's a couple
of
things I have to go through. I'm sorry, I'm trying to jump around a little bit. There's some things I have to go through before we get there. Yes, Susan.
In keeping with what you just said, it's Everett Fox translates, the glory is departed to exiled is the glory. God puts himself
in exile. Less people bothering him. Okay, so odd things happened, and God allowed them, which we would normally say couldn't happen, because God had an end, a means to an end. He needed to move. My home's defiled. Israel is defiled. He points out in chapter 2 and chapter 3. Eli, you and your sons, you have defiled my people. I need to move. So he does. Okay, so let's go back a little bit, because I got carried away with going too far forward. Okay, so let's... Oh, where was I? I just moved my chapter in the wrong place here. Okay, so they conclude, they bring the ark over, oh yay, loud blasts. Now, some worded as shouting in the camp of Israel. My book says, shofar in the camp of Israel, it's a huge massive blast such that the ground shook. Which is indicative of the voice of God, which we learned when we did the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. It was so loud, the whole ground shook and the people were, it's supposed to sound terrifying. What is shofars used for in battle? To go to battle. Let's go win. Let's go defeat them. Let's go win. God, bring your angels and help us. Why were the Philistines so petrified? It's scary. You have this weird, crazy, quote, gods, as they use their terminology, that have done some unique things in Egypt, and the Philistines are fully aware of it. They knew what happened to Egypt. They were afraid it happened to them. They didn't know what could or couldn't do. But what disadvantage did bringing the ark up in Israel's camp do to Israel?
It spurred their faith.
Say that again?
It spurred on their faith to go in.
It did. In Israel's campsite, if you have the seat of God next to you or nearby, is your focus on a battle or is your focus on the seat of God next to you? Who's your job to protect? You just effectively split your forces in two by doing a very foolish move. There's a reason why in Jericho, the ark led.
That's right.
People followed it.
That's right.
It doesn't stay next to you or behind you while you're fighting. Then work that way. God dictates how he fights. He doesn't allow men to dictate how he fights, so he wasn't fighting. Instead, the people got divided. You have part of, we don't know how many, part of Israel's camp would have been assigned to in or near the ark, while the other part went to battle. And on the other side, the Philistines, knowing that the ark of the gods, the ark of the Lord, was in the Israelite camp, what's going through their minds? They point out, they're fearful, they're petrified of dying. Well, you just made your enemies willing to die to the last man and throw everything into it. And you made yourselves divided between two different camps. It's where you're now, your loyalty, your tasks are now split.
Whereas the Philistines...
We're all one direction. Go till you're dead, because there's no other option.
And before you met them, you've just turned it upside down. You're protecting God.
Instead of
protecting
he protecting you. Exactly.
You had it there.
You can't do it. You can't do that way. You don't get to fight with God in that fashion. He fights for you. There's a difference. You don't have to do one way. You don't have to do the flip it around. So they did some really foolish things. It resulted in very bad mistakes. All of Israel had to pay for it. Now, when I read this story, years ago and more recently, last night again, and then, of course, sometimes this morning, my first instinct, the cursory examine, is always, wow, if God's goal was to punish Eli and his family, why did so many Israelites have to die?
That makes the punishment memorable.
It does make it memorable.
Well, the sins of the fathers are visited on the children.
Yes, they are. What sins is Israel? Oh, we've discussed this in the past. What's the overall spiritual level of the Israelite population this moment?
Pretty low.
And that fact, it doesn't get a whole lot lower. It gets a little lower into some of the king's point in time, but right here, it's pretty darn low. Well, why do we say that? Well, they've been worshiping multiple gods. They have multiple Asherah trees and idols scattered throughout the whole territory. And they have had for many years now. You have the whole duplicate priesthood up north that everybody's ignoring, pretending it doesn't exist, but it's really up there and it's really getting quite powerful, virtually untouched. No, God doesn't bother in seeing armies to go attack them yet. Why? He's not there. He doesn't care. It doesn't matter what God is doing up there. So overall, the overall people are really, really, really low. Now, to add on top of that, hold on a minute, Tammy, with the priesthood in Shiloh, that even brought them down lower. So, Tammy, hand up.
And you wonder why the Philistines were so so confused about how many gods Israel really had.
No doubt. You have one south, you have a couple of idols up north, who knows? And they're all called the same name.
Is it one god or not?
Exactly. Yes.
And Shiloh itself is a high place.
It is.
It's the high place.
It is. It's
getting around.
Yeah, it is a high place. As far as they're concerned, it's just another temple of whatever they have, whatever their god they have.
Highly wooded with pine trees.
Which is commonly worshipped.
That's where Samuel went too.
Yes, Samuel with Shiloh. That's where obviously where he's working.
Yes.
He lives in Ramah, which is south of there.
South.
So as far as the Philistines are concerned, Israel has probably quite a few gods.
Maybe not as many as them.
Maybe not as many as Philistines, but they have quite a few at this point in time. As far as they're concerned, they're no different than they are. They're each other. They're the same. Israel's got a bunch of gods. Philistines have a bunch of gods. It's just a matter of which god's bigger. Philistines were afraid. They knew that this god of Israel and the gods had a proven track record through the Egyptians. They had reason to fear. They knew what happened to Egypt, both in the people and the Pharaoh, and of course the plundering of it. They weren't going to mess with him normally. But at this point in time, like I mentioned before, Israel did a stupid thing. They didn't consult God, yet like they have never consulted him when they go to battle. You'd think they'd finally learn at some point in time, but they don't. The last person that did that, I think, was Joshua. They didn't consult God. And they took it upon themselves to say, well, this must be the solution. Bad choice. Bad choice. So, there are, let's see, 6 separate reasons as to why Israel lost in this brief period of time. I'll just rattle them off to you because they were interesting just to look at when you look at it all together. The first one, of course, mentioned idol worship. Israel's lots and lots of idols, which we already discussed. Eli's sons had to be killed at the same time, the same day, the same way. And, of course, that had to be done, so God had to take care of that. You had Israel took the ark out of God's house without asking. You have to die for that. You have they didn't consult God or Samuel at all. They didn't even ask him whether or not what they should do. So, again, another reason why they should lose. God will strike fear in the Philistines and do something to them to make them say, let's back off a little bit.
Yeah. And you're going to love to teach that.
I'm sure I'll enjoy that too.
It's going to be fun.
And of course, the last one, God's home was contaminated. He can't live there anymore. I got to leave. It's disgusting. It's a big deal. That's the reason why, Eli, this will never be erased from you and your family line. This curse, you cannot erase it from with sacrifice. You cannot erase it from anything else. It's permanent. You don't mess with God's home. He doesn't like it. So a lot of reasons as to why God allowed this to occur. Now, of course, we have battle occurs. The Benjamite runner. Now, tradition says it was Saul. I highly doubt it. Saul was a relatively young man when this battle takes place. The likelihood of him being the runner is pretty slim. All the runners were young. They were young, but it could be his father. Hard to say. Saul comes king in a few years from this point in time, so he's still relatively young. It could have been, but we don't know for sure. He comes running. He has dirt on his head, clothes torn, but Eli can't see that because he's blind. Because normally that is traditionally, if you see somebody running past you, clothes torn, dirt on their head, don't stop them. Bad news, they're trying to get to wherever they're going really quick. Get out of their way. Yeah, it's a warning. Something is serious happening here. Eli doesn't know it. He can't see them. He hears the commotion as the guy tells everybody, of course, goes tell Eli. Is Eli upset that his son's dying?
Yeah.
Is he upset the fact that Israel got lost, got slaughtered? Well, yeah. Is he upset regarding the ark?
Definitely.
Yes. The ark was more important.
It's his job.
It's your one function in your life. Protect this thing and do what God asks. That's it. You don't have to go out to battle. You don't even have to go farm. You don't have to be a rancher. You don't do anything. Just do this one task. Be high priest and judge Israel. And he couldn't do it. So, he's upset. Obviously knocks off and dies. Yes. You have a question? Your hand up, Bill?
It shows you, too, that God doesn't play favorites.
No, he doesn't.
And let's see, what else was it? I couldn't think of it now. That he doesn't play favorites, but he also lets everybody else know in his word. This is how it is, whether you like it or not.
That's true. God doesn't. He's right. God doesn't play favorites. He expects certain things to be done, and whether you like it or not, tough luck. There's a certain rules. Certain things have to be occurred. You don't have a choice in the matter. The ark was more important. Eli knew his sons were going to be dead. So whether or not he knew that he'd die at this point in time, granted, he's 98 years old. He knew he wasn't going to live forever. So it was going to happen pretty darn soon. Both sons would be killed. He knew it was going to occur. It's a matter of when. Whether he knew this battle or not, don't know. But he probably did. Yes.
You wonder how old these sons were. They must have been pretty old.
They're relatively old men. Yeah, relatively.
In their 40s.
Most likely. Most, yeah. Well, maybe a little older. Probably borderline 50.
He was 98.
They're probably 50s or older, most likely. But not see that Eli and his sons, you cannot serve as high priest past the age of 50 years old. You can serve as a Levite in the priesthood past that. You can't serve as high priest past 50. So his sons, if they are over 50, were no longer high priests, or neither one of them were. So Israel probably already had another high priest growing.
Or also was not consulted.
Who's also not consulted. We have a lot of non-consulting. So Eli had retired from high priesthood, but he was still a judge of Israel.
Yeah.
His sons most likely were either at the border threshold on age, before they, or maybe a little past it. They may not have been high priests anymore, but yet they're the ones who took it. Again, not allowed. A lot of things you're not allowed to do, but yet they did it anyway.
And probably the high priest at the time probably would have been the grandson.
Most likely grandson, either Phinehas' son.
Your uncle are coming in.
Precisely.
What are you doing?
Exactly. Well, you back up. It's your father. What are you going to do? You know, it's most likely Phinehas' son or Hophni's son is the high priest or serving it at that moment in time. So Samuel was a bit young and he wasn't a high priestly line. So let's see. Wife Phinehas, of course, no. She goes to labor when she hears the Ark of the Covenant's being gone. Is she upset with Phinehas' death? Oh, probably. Was she aware of who Phinehas was and the things he had been doing?
Yes.
Of course. Of course she would have known. As the wife of the previous high priest, Phinehas, she knew full well the prophecies that Eli heard and that Phinehas and Hophni were supposed to die. She would have known them because they would have been talked about. All of Israel knew them, so it was going to happen. There's nothing fancy about that. She knew why the prophecy came about, because of what Phinehas and Hophni were doing. So was she terribly upset? No, maybe. Not likely. Because of her last statement before she dies. Does not mention the death of her husband or the death of her father-in-law. It concerns itself with the loss of the Ark of the Covenant, which was more concerning to her. That was a bigger deal.
She had the same despair that Eli
did. Yes, exactly.
They already knew it was going to happen. The wheels rolled it right by. And
they just weren't expecting the Ark to be gone. That's the shocker. They all knew Phinehas and Hophni were going to be dead. They all knew that Eli's and the descendants were going to be fallen. And Ichabod, the Phinehas' son, the curse was going to continue on. She knew that. The Ark was unknown. Yes,
Taylor. Another thing to think about is, like, if you know someone who's dying of some kind of horrible disease, you have a long time to kind of mourn that.
Exactly.
When you
know it's going to happen. Exactly.
Then you mourn. Mm-hmm. You start mourning in a way.
You do.
Before they're dead, because you know it's coming. So by the time they actually die, you're almost relieved.
It could be, this could be that years later, it could have been most likely a little while later, after she heard the prophecy. So some time had elapsed.
So whatever mourning that needed to be done has already been done. So
exactly.
So it's almost like you're just waiting for the other shoe to drop and waiting for it to finally.
Exactly. Happen. Exactly. So nothing terribly fancy as far as what she was expecting to see.
It's not that she's a horrible woman. I think
she knew full well. She knew full well that she, in my opinion, reacted fairly.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty decent reaction to not concern yourself with the loss of life, because more with the loss of God.
Mm-hmm. But it does include all of that. The glory has departed from Israel because the Ark of God had been captured and because of her father-in-law and her husband.
Keep reading.
The next sentence.
That's the statement that you just read there. You're right, but it's not a direct quote. The actual quote that she cites is the last verse, 20-22, and she said, quote, "The glory has been exiled from Israel, for the Ark of God has been captured," end quote, dies. So it's not that she wasn't concerned with the death of Phinehas or the death of her Eli or father-in-law. That's not that those didn't matter to her. My point is that it seemed that she seemed, in her last dying word, accentuate the loss of the Ark over the loss of the others.
The naming of her.
Exactly.
It's like saying, what have we done?
Made a horrible choice.
What have we done? She saw it all play out. She knew what was involved. What have we done?
Couldn't say it better. Yes, Jeff. We have a couple more to go through here.
You can imagine the hopelessness of this kind of a thing. The glory has departed from Israel. Because, you know, if you... if you lose some things because of judgment upon that's coming from God, that's
upon you rather than all the whole people.
But, you know, you still have hope. Okay, well they're gone, but at least we still have, you know, the Lord is among us. You know, the Lord
we can
is
move forward.
Temple, but oh no, he's not there anymore.
That's gone also. It's pretty disastrous. Now, there's other places that talk about this subject matter, not just here in Samuel chapter 4. I wrote them down here. Jeremiah 7 refers to it, and of course, refers again in 26. And the book of Psalms refers to it, or a chapter at least there. So let's go there and read them, because it's just interesting to note. You have the starting of something profound here. Because it pointed out that God leaves, but where does he end up? He ends up in Judah. So you don't have to go to Jeremiah 7, it's just a reference. It's a reference. Jeremiah points out that God will make Jerusalem like he did Shiloh, desolate. He does it again in 26, which is a more interesting read. So go to straight Jeremiah 26 for now, if I can get there quickly. This is Jeremiah chapter 26. Isaac's upsetting it. He's seething. Verse 6 through 9. So let's see here. This is Jeremiah. Now, Jeremiah he's entering in. He's going into Jerusalem. He's talking to the people who were in charge. Say, hey, bad things are happening. Are going to happen to Jerusalem. They don't take kindly to his words. Naturally, they normally don't. But he has to say this anyway because God said so. He is quoting God. We're not going to read all of his entire quote, just the section that we actually concerning. He says, then, verse 6, I will make this house like Shiloh, and will make this city a curse to all the nations of the earth. So the priests and the prophets and all the people heard Jeremiah speaking his words in the house of the Lord. Now it happened when Jeremiah had made an end of speaking all that the Lord had commanded him to speak, all the people and the priests and the prophets and all the people seized him, saying, you will surely die. Why have you prophesied in the name of the Lord, saying, this house shall be like Shiloh, and this city shall be desolate, without an inhabitant? And all the people were gathered against Jeremiah in the house of the Lord. Now, we read through all of it. Jeremiah says, hey, I'm doing my job. You can kill me if you want, but it's your responsibility for killing somebody who's completely innocent. The deal is, you don't get to prophesy against God. Well, he wasn't. He was prophesying against the house of God.
Yeah,
different. And the people who were in charge of it, they're the ones who were receiving the prophecy. So Jeremiah was perfectly legit in doing exactly what he did and why he did it. They just didn't care for it. Similarly, he references Shiloh. Now, after this point, after the loss of the ark, Shiloh never recovers. Never. That's it. It's done. Now, tradition says, well, it's because the Philistines made their way all the way to Shiloh and destroyed it.
Maybe.
I doubt it, because if that was the case, Eli, when he goes there in the course of Benjamin, right, he would have been saying, we've lost the ark. He said, evacuate, they're coming. You know, get out of town. We don't know for sure. They may or may not have. There's no record of the actual battle that took place at Shiloh. What I'm more inclined to believe, once God was gone, he cursed the city.
And nobody wanted to really go there anyway.
There's no reason to go there anymore. There's nothing
even
left.
Even when the Eli sons were alive, people went there because they had to. They didn't want to go there. So after Eli's sons were gone, it's like,
why go anymore?
Go there anymore.
Exactly. You're done.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this whole thing in Jeremiah. About,
it's quite interesting. Yeah. If you read the whole chapter.
It sounds a lot like what happened with Stephen when he was in the Sanhedrin.
It is.
Exactly.
Same response.
Thing. And they grabbed him and killed him.
Yep, they grabbed him and killed him. Now, Jeremiah doesn't die here, but good thing he didn't. He had a lot more to say.
Yeah.
It would have ended rather quickly. So he points out that God used this as a lesson. Jeremiah uses it again. It's a lesson. You didn't learn here, back in Shiloh with Eli. You're not learning now, of course, Jeremiah's time. God's going to wipe this out. Whatever has happened in the past is going to happen in the future. That's just the way which the Bible works. It's the way how God seems to work. He repeats himself. Why? Well, why is anything repeated in the Bible? To catch your attention and say, because it's really important. So he repeats the events also. God doesn't just repeat the words. He has the events repeat. Happened in Shiloh, happened in Jerusalem, happens again in Jerusalem. It's supposed to happen yet one more time, which we haven't gotten there yet. It's in our future. But so the destruction of the house is nothing new. It happened. It was a very difficult thing to occur, but it was new at this point in time during Eli's issue, but it wasn't new by the time Jeremiah showed up. But that's the other place it's written. Psalms discusses it and actually makes a profound statement. which I find interesting. I wish to share that with you because I think it shows the nature of God and what he intends to do. So this is Psalms chapter 78. Is that right there? Yeah, 78. I'm not going to read the whole psalm. It's rather long. I'm only reading the section that regarding this event and the soon-to-be future events for Eli's future, which regards to David arriving. So it starts in verse 56 of Psalm 78. First let's back up a little bit. Psalm 78 starts out with discussing as far as, you know, coming out of Egypt, God selecting the people, the whole process of vetting them, getting through the plagues, what the people chose God, then they chose not to follow God, then they chose to follow God, then chose not to follow God, back and forth. That's pretty much what the chapter's about. But we're not starting in the beginning, we're starting midway through. So, verse 56, "Yet they tested and provoked the Most High God and did not keep his testimonies, but turned back and acted unfaithfully like their fathers. They were turned aside like a deceitful bow. For they provoked him to anger with their high places and moved him to jealousy with their carved images. When God heard this, he was furious and greatly abhorred Israel, so that he forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh, the tent which he had placed among men, and delivered his own strength into captivity, and his glory into the enemy's hand. He also gave his people over to the sword, and was furious with his inheritance. The fire consumed their young men, their maidens were not given in marriage, their priests fell by the sword, and their widows made no lamentation." Then we'll read next time. "Then the Lord awoke as one out of a sleep, and like a mighty man who shouts because of wine. And he beat back his enemies, put them to perpetual reproach," which we'll discuss what that means later. "Moreover, he rejected the tent of Joseph." This is important.
Yes.
"He rejected the tent of Joseph and did not choose the tribe of Ephraim, but chose the tribe of Judah, Mount Zion, which he loved, and he built a sanctuary like the heights, like the earth which is like the earth which he has established forever. He also chose David his servant and took him from the sheepfolds. From following the ewes that had young, he brought him to shepherd Jacob his people and Israel his inheritance. So he shepherded them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands." So we have Asaph, who wrote this psalm. He's discussing the process. This is the key moment in time. Ephraim had control of the ark for 370 years. It was located at Shiloh in Ephraim's territory. Who got all the blessings because the ark was there? Well, Ephraim was insulated from virtually every battle unless they went out to go to battle. They were protected. It's a very well-blessed region, at least it was. He left them. He rejects Ephraim and chooses Judah. That was a profound choice that God makes. He rejects the line of Joseph. He rejects the one that went all the way down into Egypt and saved his family's life. "I don't need you anymore. You're unacceptable to me. I'm choosing Judah instead. I'm crossing my hands." This is as Jacob did to Joseph's sons. "I'm crossing my hands off of Joseph and onto Judah." Important event. Why do you think he did it?
What?
Why do you think he did it? Why do you think it was so important that God did this event to Ephraim?
Maybe
yes,
so we wouldn't have to kill them all.
Well, yes, he's rather pragmatic of him.
I think it's probably more like what Ephraim did and how
their idol worship, choosing of rejecting their own God.
Yeah.
He's not going to dwell where he's not wanted. Ephraim didn't want him.
And therefore,
I'll choose somebody who does. Which we're going to read in a couple of weeks from now. We discuss this when the ark comes back, because guess where it goes back to? It doesn't go back to Ephraim. It goes back to Judah's territory, Beth Shemesh, which is in Judah. He doesn't take the road over to, you know, up to back to Shiloh like you would normally think, which his house is, quote, supposed to be at. He doesn't go there. He goes to Beth-Shemesh. Now, of course, they may do some stupid things there too, but that's just the nature of people. So they get to pay for their own crimes. But we'll discuss that when it gets there. But God made this profound choice. It's pointed out when he discussed in chapter 3, this is going to ring in everyone's ears when they hear it. The house of God being destroyed. The ark of God being stolen. And God rejecting one of the biggest, most profound, most powerful tribes in Israel. Switching gears. I'm going the other direction. Yes, Ellie?
So what you're saying is if we don't follow through with what God puts in front of us, he'll find somebody else to do it.
Precisely, which is exactly what he did. He's done it all along. How do you think the Philistines got there?
Yeah.
Well, because people weren't willing to take the territory. They had, Israel had years, almost, was it 50, 40 or 50 years to conquer this one region, and they didn't. Not worth it, too much work. Okay? I'll get somebody who will. Philistines, come on in. They conquer it instead. If you're not willing to do the job, I'll find somebody who will. Pretty simple. Unfortunately, we all pay for it. We all pay for bad choices. Not just the one who makes it, but everybody else who's the recipient thereof. All of Israel pays this, not just for Eli's issues, but for all of Israel's problems. You have a whole army that got not wiped out, but mostly destroyed from this. Pretty tough judgment. But God doesn't play around. He doesn't like his house being played with. He set rules in place and designed them to run one way. You don't get to make your choices and do it something different. This is what he set. You don't like the rules, he'll find somebody who does.